number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loans studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Let me tell you what's going to be a storyline for Super Bowl week. Peyton Manning's possible retirement. That's going to be a storyline. That's something the media should pay attention to. The Denver Bronco defense is a story. That's something people should analyze and talk about. The Cam Newton-led Panthers offense is something that the media should talk about. The coaches are coming into this Super Bowl, Ron Rivera and Gary Kubiak. The defensive philosophy and game plan of Wade Phillips, that's something should be talked about. Peyton Manning's legacy is something that's on the table. Cam Newton's legacy as well, as he begins to start developing his credentials for one of the better quarterbacks in the league with a Super Bowl championship. All of these are on the table. Do you know what is not a story? Do you know what is not a storyline in this Super Bowl? The Carolina Panthers as a team whining that nobody respects them. That is old, and it is simply not true. And look, if you want to ride that thing for whatever it's worth, because deep down that's what motivates you, fine. Even if it's not true, fine. If that's what gets you out of bed in the morning, fine. If that's something you want to throw in people's face, fine. But it's a lie if you believe that you are being undervalued in this Super Bowl. Just because you believe it doesn't make it so. Just because you think it's true doesn't mean it is true. Vegas has this team favored by over 7 points. Most of the people I know and talk to and read all are thinking that the Carolina Panthers are going to win this Super Bowl. It is simply a lie that the media and the public believe you are underdogs in this game. I believe it's going to be a good game. I think it's going to be a better game than people think. Now, you watch. I'll be back here Sunday night to do the Super Bowl show talking about another blowout, because my predictions hardly ever come true. I'm not afraid to admit I'm terrible at this. But I do know that the consensus is Denver's going to struggle offensively. And look, talking to Adam Rank last hour, that's a concern. The Denver Broncos offense is a concern. And I know it's cliche and it's easy, but one thing I try never to do is go down cliche and easy, because I don't want to be lazy. And it's lazy to say things like, well, you know, Peyton Manning, if there's a quarterback that'll have something up his sleeve for the big game, you know it'll be Peyton Manning. That's not true. When did we see that at all this season? What was he saving it just in case he got to the Super Bowl? Because he didn't pull out a rabbit out of a hat in the second half against the Patriots in the AFC title game. And he didn't do it early on in that game against the Steelers. So it's inconceivable to believe that he's saving up magic for the Super Bowl. Peyton Manning is struggling right now. That offense is struggling. They're going to need to run the ball. He's not throwing the ball well. He's not going to get away with that against the Carolina Panthers. It doesn't mean the Broncos can't win, but it don't fall into the trap of believing that all of a sudden that Manning and the Broncos are going to look like they were 2 years ago when they were tearing up the league until Seattle beat them up in the Super Bowl. That's not the quarterback. As much as you want to believe it's true, it's not true. As much as you want to believe that that's going to happen, it doesn't make it so. Same with the Carolina Panthers complaining about being underdogs. They're not underdogs in this game. They're favorites. They're favorites in Vegas, if you want to go into that line of thinking in terms of gambling. They're favorites in the mind of people who see a more complete team than the Broncos. And again, I'm not laying out the absolute that the Panthers are going to win this game and win this game by double digits. But what I'm saying is there is no us against the world mentality. But if the Panthers want to believe that, I'll let them believe that, but I won't acknowledge that that's true. As a matter of fact, I kind of hate when people do that. Because as I've said many times, most of these people don't care what people in the media think anyway. They don't care what people write. They have so much disdain for people who cover them on a daily basis that they don't even give it a second thought when they are negative. But boy, they will run to the nobody believes in us card as soon as they can play that. I brought this up with Dabo Swinney before the national championship, and I'm bringing it up with the Carolina Panthers. If I've heard it once, I've heard it 1,000 times. Oh, you people in the media, you just write and say your silly things. You know, there's a bunch of us here in the locker room that actually play the game that just do not give it a second thought what you crazy people write about on a daily basis. But as soon as they can latch on to the, see, you didn't think we'd win, you don't think we're good enough, we're grabbing that, and we're actually going to make it bulletin board material because, you know, winning an actual title just doesn't motivate us enough. Proving you wrong, well, that's why we go to practice every single day. It's ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous. It's crazy. But again, I know I'm dealing with 20-something-year-old kids on a football team, and they all are going to buy into that same sort of mindset because it's cliche and it's lazy and it's actually ridiculous. You don't need motivation from the media to go win a Super Bowl, for crying out loud. And the media needs to stop pretending it has that kind of power. That's the other thing I can't stand. Well, you better not write that about Peyton Manning, because Peyton Manning's going to read that and what? And do what? Oh, now he's going to throw 5 touchdown passes? Now he's going to throw 440 yards with a completion percentage of 90% because somebody in the Denver Post wrote something negative about him? Now he's all of a sudden going to show up? That's not going to happen. Same with the Panthers. I think the Panthers could win the game if everybody loved him or everybody hated him. But you know why people like ProFootballTalk.com and all these other people are lining up with that? Because it's because you just fill on Super Bowl Media Day over and over and over again. These kind of questions. Panthers, stop. Everybody loves you. Everybody might not love Cam Newton, but everybody loves you. And let's start loving Cam Newton. Let's just, if you don't like Cam Newton because he dances, just stop. I'm asking everybody to stop. All right, 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. Hey, don't forget, follow us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, and then also like us on Facebook at Tony D Radio Show. We'd love to meet you, say hi, just give us a like and say hello, and we'll say hello back. Coming up in this hour, we're going to talk about National Signing Day a bit. Andy Staples had a pretty good article on SI.com. It's a little bit misleading on the headline, but I thought the crux of the article was still pretty good to the point. The headline talked about doing away with National Signing Day, but it's not what you think. I'll explain that coming up in just a few minutes. And I got a little bit of a divorce that I've got to actually make on this show. And I really need to start cutting ties now with Johnny Manziel, because I think this guy needs a lot of help. And I just think this is going to be a guy we're going to talk about in 5 or 6 years and just say, you know, that really didn't go anywhere. All the hype, all the excitement, and it didn't go anywhere. I'm afraid that is happening to Johnny Manziel. And in our Super Bowl review of this date in history, we did Super Bowl 38 last hour. We go back to Super Bowl 43, where the Pittsburgh Steelers beat the Arizona Cardinals in a game that really had that last second drive, or, well, I wouldn't say last second drive, but her, you know, pressure drive by Ben Roethlisberger, and then hold your breath as Kurt Warner and the Arizona Cardinals try to make a game of that towards the end. A very, very good Super Bowl that was held in Tampa back just not that long ago, Super Bowl 43. We'll go over that coming up this hour as well. 800-777-2907. If you want to get your thoughts on Super Bowl 50, I don't know, again, where this game is heading. But I do know that if Denver is going to win this game, 38-41 points are not going to be on their scoreboard. It's going to be a Denver defense doing what it has done all year and Manning just getting by and just doing enough. And as we've been talking about leading up into this game, it's not the ideal. Because when we watch John Elway in Super Bowl 33 go out on a high note, it was a game in which Elway was the MVP. He was great. He played well, looked like he could still play, and then ended on a high note. That's not the Peyton Manning we're going to get. We might get a Peyton Manning that'll play well, but we're not getting the Peyton Manning that we remember. And that's the kind of thing that I worry about in this Super Bowl. Because I don't know if that's good enough to beat this Carolina Panthers team. It can, because the defense is that good. But I don't know if Peyton Manning is just pedestrian. I don't know if a pedestrian Peyton Manning is going to be good enough against Carolina's defense. We'll talk National Signing Day next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, with the Super Bowl going on, a lot of attention, obviously, what's going on in San Francisco. But there is National Signing Day coming up on Wednesday. Now, if you live in a college football-heavy area, it's a big deal. This is a big deal. It's become almost a sporting event in and of itself. It is a day of bragging rights. It is a day of a little trash talking. It's a day of showboating. And the most important thing, it allows high school students to be kings of the world, where they will gather at gyms across the nation and play the game of, am I going with this hat or am I going with this hat? I'm going with this hat. No, I'm not. I'm putting it down. I'm going with this hat. All right. That's basically how that's going to work. Now, Andy Staples at SI.com wrote an article today, which I really wanted to bring your attention, because in it, the headline was really was kind of talking about the end of National Signing Day. But the article wasn't really about saying, let's just kill this whole process. What basically it was in a new age of technology, commitments are made verbally on Twitter and they're made verbally on social media. But they're not commitments until the name is on a piece of paper. That's why National Signing Day exists. But the problem with where we are now in social media is that guys are making verbal commitments to schools and then changing their mind. And therefore, when they go to put their, you're not 100% sure you have a kid until that day is locked in until he signs it. But if coaches are just going to get guys to sign, why not just allow them to just do it whenever? And it's kind of because it does away with the national holiday that has become National Signing Day. And in it, all of the hoopla that I think disgusts most people. Look, I understand the importance of it. As a college football fan and a fan of a school that's in the SEC, I get the importance of National Signing Day. But I'm also not crazy to think it is the be-all, end-all of any sort of college success. You need to groom kids. You need to make sure that they're the right kids for your program. They need to perform. They need to not bust. You need to coach them well. You need to make sure that they work well and all the other factors that go into any sport when it comes to the draft, right? When you draft players in the NFL, you can say they got an A-plus draft. 3 years, they could still be 6-10. 4 years later, when those guys have matured, they could still be a losing football team. Some work out, some don't become as big as we think. All of that applies to National Signing Day. But in order to win a national championship in college football, you've got to at least come close to winning this day. That you're not going to win a national title if you hover around 50 every single year in recruiting class grades. You're just not. You have to be one of the premier schools that is winning recruiting day and National Signing Day. And so that puts a lot of pressure on the day. The biggest thing working against coaches is how these websites that are out there, Rivals, Scout, all of these sites, grade players and then grade you. Because if you, as a coach, you have to answer for this to the school president who's hearing about it from the boosters. So if the boosters are looking up rivals.com and this, you know, the good old state U is hover at 21, the coach has to answer for that. And he's only answering based on a arbitrary grade that he got based on his recruits on how the people think they will perform at the next level or how they grade out. So instead of you can't win that war if you're a coach. You just can't win that war. You can't spin it. If you're expected to be a top 10 recruiting class and you pull in on National Signing Day a 21st recruiting class, you can't spin that any other way. You can't do the old-fashioned way of just saying, trust me, I'm the coach. I know what I'm doing. I got the guys I want. You can't do that. You have to go out there and answer for why you're not landing some of these big-name recruits. And if you aren't getting the big-name recruits in your state, you have to answer for that too. Look, as a guy who understands the importance of what's going to happen on Wednesday, it's still doesn't feel good when I see a kid in a huge auditorium playing the hat game. I wish that wasn't part of this. But for a school, a high school, it's a big deal. When one of your students is going to go play for Alabama, it's a big deal and you're going to celebrate that. There's nothing I can tell a school about, hey, you know what? That's a little dangerous. It starts to feed into a kid's psyche that's probably not good. It leads to a lot of resentment. It's just not a good thing when you start parading these hats around in front of a student body. But a school is not going to turn down an opportunity to celebrate one of their students heading to a major program where they're going to be playing on television on Saturdays and maybe make a huge name for themselves. They're going to exploit that. Of course they are. Coaches are going to do it. They coach that kid. It's going to be a big deal in that town. It just naturally is. But it's almost better the way Andy Staples is proposing. Which is instead of these big ceremonies, let's try to just get the day to be just an end result of everything. Have guys already locked in. Have guys already signed. Have guys, everyone already taken care of. Have it just be accumulation. And I'll tell you right now, the other thing that about National Signing Day that's tougher for kids in this day and age is the amount of trolling that will go on their Twitter pages and Facebook pages when you don't pick the school that they want you to. And even coaches, to some extent, will call out a kid. You want a kid to go to some, you know, school A, and they elect to go to school B. Coaches are not above making comments about that decision. And we're talking about 17-year-old kids here. And the other thing about it, the thing that does drive me crazy, is kids should be allowed to change their mind. Coaches change their mind all the time. And yet high school students that change their mind are treated as disloyal to a program they're not loyal to in the first place. If a kid picks Ole Miss and then last minute changes his mind to go to Mississippi State or LSU or Alabama, that kid is publicly shamed by the rebel fans who call him all sorts of names for changing his mind when all he did was change his mind. Because people got hurt that he dissed their school. It's ridiculous. So National Signing Day is an important day for college football. It's a major day in college football. Do I like how it's executed? No. Do I wish it was changed? Yes. Do I understand it's hard to change? Yeah, I do. Because it's simply something you can't get out of people's routine. Every February, they're used to this one day, this major day, when high school athletes across the country announce where they're going to school, and it's bragging rights again. You have bragging rights on the football field, you have bragging rights in bowl games, and now you can have bragging rights on National Signing Day in February. It's a rite of passage. I mean, my father-in-law is so into this stuff. It's great. When we get together, he loves to tell me about all the Gator recruits, all of them. Guys I've never heard of and probably never will hear of. But he loves the Gators, and he loves this process. So to him, this stuff is, he just eats this stuff up. And it makes, I tell my wife, I said, I'm really happy that he gets excited about something like that. So National Signing Day is coming on Wednesday. Will it be the same thing? Yeah. We'll talk Manziel next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Super Bowl 50. San Francisco, media day today. Not much was learned. Peyton Manning kept his career decision quiet. Like Peyton Manning's going to announce he's going to retire at Super Bowl Media Day. You know, you hear this all the time, though. I know I've had to do it. When I was on the beat with a couple of teams, you have to ask the question, even though you know what the answer is going to be. You have to ask it anyway. So naturally, Peyton Manning is going to get asked, all right, are you going to retire? Well, I'm not going to say right now. And the one thing I did like about Peyton Manning's answers today is that he really praised Cam Newton. He said, hey, if he ran in for a touchdown, he'd be celebrating too. He'd dance too. I like the way Peyton Manning does that. There's a part of me that knows better, though. Like, a lot of it is Manning doesn't want to be controversial on these days. So he may not give you the truth. He might give you partial truth. But I got a feeling that what he says about Cam Newton, he really does believe. I don't think it's just tongue-in-cheek praise just to praise. I think he believes it. I think he really, really likes what he brings to the game. I think that the thing about Peyton Manning is Manning is so guarded with a lot of things that he says. When he does say something that you could construe as an attack or throwing somebody on the bus or something, I think it is calculated. I don't think Manning ever makes a mistake. I think when you read between the lines and you discover something, you're probably right. You know, when he talked about the scoreboard operator, or when he talked about his offensive line in Indianapolis and that loss to Pittsburgh, even when he did the Mike Vanderjagt idiot kicker thing, I think it's calculated stuff. I think he's very, very well versed in, I can do this, I can plant this, this can go out, and I know where this is going. I can fire shots because I know where they're going to land. I think Manning is brilliant on that. Even when they appear to backfire, they never really backfire. Name one time Manning has gotten in trouble saying something, anything. Even the idiot kicker thing, most people are like, yeah, idiot kicker, yeah, sure he is. Absolutely he is. And even when that game against the Steelers in the playoffs, he talked about protection problems and he talked about his offensive line, and people were like, well, you know, it sounds like he's throwing his offensive line under the bus there. Probably was, but it's that subtle way he does these things. And but I believe 100% that his praise of Cam Newton is genuine. That Newton's going to be the face of the NFL for a while and whatnot. I think that's a genuine feeling from Peyton Manning. All right, so I am here to divorce myself from Johnny Manziel. I have been a huge supporter of Johnny Manziel coming into this league. And I've had to eat it a bit because of his routine unprofessionalism in Cleveland. But when he checked himself into rehab, I jumped right back on saying, really smart, intelligent kid that is realizing at a very young age he has a problem. A lot of guys don't go into rehab this young. Professional athletes don't realize they have a problem this early in their career. They usually wait till it's really, really screwed up before they do anything. He is taking the right steps. But this latest incident, this latest, again, possible domestic violence incident with this girlfriend that is clearly a problem for him and the girl, of those two being together, that's it. I don't want Johnny Manziel to disappear into the where are they now segment. But I'm at a point where I am no longer believing the idea that this kid could eventually have a somewhat okay career. My thing with Manziel has always been, I never thought he would be a superstar in this league, but I thought he would be fun for a little bit and then sort of disappear. But kind of go, you know, just kind of one of those guys that popped up, did some really fun things. We talked about him. He was a buzz. It was kind of interesting. But eventually the league caught up to him and he kind of disappeared. But I don't think he's even going to get that opportunity. Unless Jerry Jones decides that all the problems are still worth it on bringing him to the Dallas Cowboys. And that, I hope, doesn't happen. And I hope Jerry doesn't consider this and doesn't look at the Cowboys as sort of that football rehab where he can go and everything works in Jerry's world. Because that is absolutely going to be a problem for that football team.
Well, you know what else wouldn't make sense in that scenario is the fact that if Jerry was to bring in Johnny Manziel, who, let's face it, is still partying. He's taking pictures of himself partying, drinking at parties. He's going to Vegas in disguises, all kinds of stuff. There's a report that came out just not too long ago that the Cowboys will not re-sign Greg Hardy because he partied too much.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, they're obviously different situations with Greg Hardy and the domestic abuse and all that, but it's still the same type of situation.
I think when Jones has an idea of liking a guy, he lets that cloud a lot of the judgment.
100%.
And so if he's loving Manziel regardless of all these problems, but still sees not a Manziel now, but a Manziel that cleans up his act, improves, and gets his act together, that then you can't talk him out of it. And that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that deep down, this is not a direction he wants to go. Because, look, somewhere along the line, the thing with Manziel is he needs to stop being enabled, right? He needs to stop having an opportunity. He needs to sort of get things straight and figure out what in his life is falling apart. Because given the opportunity in Cleveland, he still could not win over favor with a coaching staff that never liked him. Now, that's a hard thing to do, I grant you. But not showing up or being late and all those things added on to a problem that he already had built into being with the Browns and Mike Pettin, is that Mike Pettin never believed in him. Mike Pettin never wanted him there. And Hugh Jackson absolutely doesn't want him around. So the Browns are going to cut ties. And here's the thing. Sometimes this is the problem sometimes when you draft a guy like this, is that it's hard to cut ties with him. Because we're not talking about, I mean, when you really think about it, we are talking about a first round pick that the Browns are going to have to cut ties with after 2 years. When do we do that? When do teams do that? Where they literally pay a guy money that gives them no value whatsoever, gave the team practically nothing. And then 2 years later, they're cutting ties with a terrible, terrible bust.
And now they have to pick another quarterback, most likely at two, if it's Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, whoever.
Absolutely.
But it's just, and the thing with Jerry, as we all know, he has such this huge, huge, huge ego of always wanting to prove himself right. If we remember back to when Manziel was drafted, he had to be basically taken out of the room so he wouldn't draft Manziel at, I think it was 13 or 14, wherever they were placed at in that draft. This is now his chance to get him and show that, yes, I made the right decision. This kid can still play in the NFL.
And that's something that I think, as an observer in this league, that's one of the biggest problems that you have in these kind of situations where, yes, it's, you know what, it's hard to cut guys sometimes because their money still counts and they're, you know, you have to, when you release a guy, you're still trying to figure out how to make it work. And I get that economic aspect of it, but a lot of it is pride. But the thing that the Cleveland Browns have going for them right now is they've got new people in place where they don't have to answer for this dumb decision. They don't have to say, well, we made a mistake. You know, Hugh Jackson, for example, is like, I wasn't around. Management there, the baseball guy that's running, he's like, I didn't draft Johnny Manziel. So I don't have to prove anything. I don't have to show you my smarts. We can just release him. But Jerry, the Cowboys are not a place where all of your ills go away, where all of the things that make you, you know, struggle with life disappear. The Cowboys could actually make things worse. I mean, there's a sense with Johnny Manziel that he's lost control of everything of his life. I don't think becoming a Cowboy gives him any control.
No.
Gives him any control back.
Not at all.
Right?
Especially his home state.
Exactly. I think this is a dynamite keg ready to explode.
Can he go to Canada and play?
That might work. That might work. All right, coming up, what made Super Bowl 43 so great? Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, taking you back in time on this date in Super Bowl history, February 1st. I know it's February 2nd for those of you past the midnight hour. But February 1st, there were three Super Bowls played on that date, including the next one that we're going to talk about, February 1st, 2009. Super Bowl 43 pit the Pittsburgh Steelers against the Arizona Cardinals in Tampa. A bittersweet Super Bowl for me, because as a Steelers fan, of course, I was naturally jacked up and excited about it. But it was also a very, very dark, dark time for us as a country, because we were in the middle of a recession. There was the global economic crisis, and I was unemployed at the time. I had lost my radio job in Colorado Springs, and while my wife was still working in the medical field, I was a stay-home dad. So I remember watching the Super Bowl, and really, as a guy who does talk radio for a living and had done talk radio, it was so difficult not to run to a radio station the next day to talk about the Super Bowl. But nevertheless, it was still enjoyable to watch anyway as a fan. But it was really an interesting game. This game featured two starting quarterbacks that had previously won Super Bowls. You had to really go back far, back to Super Bowl 19, or Super Bowl 18, to actually find two quarterbacks who had done that. Ben Roethlisberger had won Super Bowl 40 with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and then Kurt Warner of the Arizona Cardinals had won Super Bowl 34 as a member of the St. Louis Rams. The Steelers were going for Super Bowl win number 6. They had 5 up until that point, but they also had a Super Bowl loss in Super Bowl 30. But they were trying to become the first team to win 6 Super Bowls. And Arizona was led by Ken Wisenhunt. The Steelers ended up getting on the board first and second as they scored on the first two drives of the game. They got a field goal when Ben Roethlisberger couldn't get into the end zone on a 1-yard touchdown plunge. The replay actually showed that he was down, so they settled for a field goal. They got a Gary Russell touchdown to make it 10-0, but Arizona came back. And in the second quarter, it was a Ben Patrick touchdown catch from Kurt Warner that made the score 10-7. And then the next series became very, very interesting. Arizona was driving down the field just before halftime. A chance to go up 14-10. And just before halftime, James Harrison intercepted a Kurt Warner pass in the end zone and returned it 100 yards for a Pittsburgh touchdown as time expired. Now, as a fan, I'm jumping up and down screaming, and all I'm doing is praying that he doesn't go out of bounds. Really hoping he doesn't go out of bounds, because this is one of those kind of plays where if any Arizona Cardinal had gotten to James Harrison and knocked him out of bounds, no touchdown, no possession, time on the clock was 0. Everybody heads to the locker room. It would be just a failed attempt at Arizona to try to score just before half. They didn't have to worry about the Steelers setting themselves up with good field position or getting a field goal or anything like that. Knock James Harrison out of bounds. Everybody goes to the locker room and it's 10-7. But instead, it made the game 17-7. When the Steelers added a field goal in the third quarter to go up 27, remember, they had the best defense in the NFL going up until that point. It looked like the Steelers were pretty much going to cruise to a Super Bowl victory. Arizona hadn't done all that much, but they still had Kurt Warner and they still had Larry Fitzgerald. Fourth quarter starts. Here come the Arizona Cardinals. They score the next three scoring results were Arizona's. Larry Fitzgerald, a 1-yard touchdown catch. They get a safety. Then Fitzgerald, with about 2 minutes left to go in the game, just over 2 minutes left to go in the game, splits the middle and catches a 64-yard touchdown from Kurt Warner, and they go up 23-20. And the Steelers are on a last-second drive. Ben Roethlisberger starts methodically moving the Steelers down the field, and they get down to the end zone. Roethlisberger looks for Holmes on first down, can't find him, and then decides to go to him again, and this makes the play of the night.
Roethlisberger has time, throws to the back of the end zone, and it is caught for a touchdown by Holmes.
Unbelievable.
Incredible.
Al Michaels, NBC, as Santonio Holmes, who was the MVP of the Super Bowl, catches a 6-yard touchdown pass with 35 seconds left, a beautifully thrown pass by Roethlisberger to the only spot that Holmes could get it and stay in bounds. They looked at it. It ended up being a touchdown. But the game wasn't over. The game wasn't over. In fact, the Arizona Cardinals had the ball at midfield. And as time was ticking away, Kurt Warner was set to throw a Hail Mary. Lamar Woodley came in, forced a fumble, sacked Warner. The Steelers recovered and ran out the clock. It was one of the most watched Super Bowls of all time, despite the economic malaise that the country was in. That was a year where a lot of major advertisers pulled out of the Super Bowl. A lot of the it was nicknamed the Recession Bowl, but I, to be honest with you, I don't remember even years later really anybody calling it that. But I do remember a lot of like the car manufacturers and whatnot had to pull out of the Super Bowl. For the Steelers, of course, that meant Super Bowl VI. For Arizona, it really showed a lot of determination to get back into a game. Again, against a very one of the best defenses in the NFL, if not the best defense in the NFL. And the way they played that fourth quarter, Kurt Warner almost pulled this off. And the Steelers ended up with one of the more dramatic endings of a Super Bowl. It wasn't a last-second touchdown because, again, Arizona was toying with it in the final 30 seconds of the game, got the ball to midfield, and had a legitimate chance to try to do something. And with Kurt Warner and Larry Fitzgerald, you wouldn't put it past them. Steelers win Super Bowl 43 in Tampa 27-23. Coming up next hour, with Calvin Johnson retiring, does the NFL have an early retirement problem? We'll discuss that next. It's Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.